one and a two.
Please hang up and try again.
Thursday night, you're listening to Kayak Fishing Radio. I'm Chip Gibson, the tree hugger, and the folks are rolling in. Have a seat, sit down, relax. The weather is, wow, man, it's just been a crazy winter this year, and it is, it's March, and we've got 36 degrees and rain here in Atlanta. And I think there was actually a little bit of sleet scheduled for tonight, so unbelievable. But anyways, we're going to talk about fishing, and it won't be long. I saw the buds on the trees, and the frogs are kicking it at night when it's not cold, but when it's up in the 40s and 50s, they're right before sundown, and the clocks are springing forward this weekend, so it's on the way. Let me say hi to the folks here in the house. We got the Navy vet, hey Sean, and Jim, and Yak Chum is there, and let me open it up in here in the studio. There's Jim on the north side of ATL. What's going on, man?
How's it going, Godfather? Just chilly up here on the north side.
Yeah, man. Guys got to be at least a whole couple degrees colder than we are on the south side here. So, but,
that's right.
And we'll bring him in, the man, the voice.
I tell you, that's like stepping up to the plate in Yankee Stadium. You just never know what the first pitch is going to be. That's awesome.
Good evening, Mr. Becker.
Good evening, Mr. Gibson. A pleasure to be here. Hey, Jim.
Yeah. So,
hello, sir.
Well, I don't know. We didn't get any fishing in this past week. How about you, Jim? Did you get down to the pond?
No, but I got to break out the chainsaw. Does that count?
Got to break out the chainsaw? Yeah, we're still
yep.
Feeling the we're in the throes of downed trees and tree branches and everything. We made a couple of trips to the dump with some branches ourselves on Saturday, but
the water in both the ponds is really cold, and so is the river. I don't know. It'd be like ice fishing just about, except with a liquid surface.
It all looks like chocolate milk anyways, because all the runoff and everything. I mean, every pond that I drive by around here, it's just nasty. Like you say, should be some crappie or bass trying to get up on the beds, but you wouldn't be able to see them anyways because you can't see in the water. So, how about you, Mr. Becker? Did you make it to the water, or were you at a Tampa Outdoor show, weren't you?
Yeah, we did the Tampa Outdoor Show part of the weekend, and my son, Junior Fly Reel, Robert, actually got to fish with Mark Nichols himself out at the bass pond behind in the Tampa the fairgrounds in Tampa while Mark was showing him how to rig and fish an airhead. So that was enough fishing for him, I guess. We did get out to do a little pond fishing on Saturday, but certainly nothing that compared to that. So
give us some insight. Captain Mark Nichols, the main man behind the DOA lures, the DOA
Absolutely.
Shrimp.
Yep, DOA shrimp, the airheads, and a whole bunch of other great lures. We were at the show, and Robert and I were there with Bull Bay Rods, kind of working the booth, but walking around the show a little bit, and the DOA booth was right down at the end of our aisle. And we stopped and we're talking for a few minutes about the Adventure Fishing World Championship, where I was on Team DOA, and talked about fishing the airheads a little bit. And he's got a new trick for slicing the tail, and showed Robert that. And I don't even remember what question Robert asked, but it was something about how to fish it. Well, Mark said, well, hold on a second. And he goes back behind the display, pulls out a rod with an airhead on it, says, come on, let's go out to the pond. I'll show you. So rather than me go with him, so it would be me and Mark with Robert tagging along, I let Robert go by himself, and I just hung out at the booth. So they were gone for about half an hour and came back, and I don't think Robert's feet touched the ground for the next hour and a half, you know, because he got to hang out with Captain Mark Nichols, and, Mark caught a bass, and Robert, you know, lifted it and took the hook out and let it go and everything else, and that was just the coolest thing on the planet. So
it was a good time. He was guiding for Captain Mark.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He was doing the outfitter role.
Awesome.
Yep.
And Mark is a really nice guy. 2 years ago, I went down and fished the DOA Paddlers event. And if you guys haven't fished that event, if you're listening to the podcast, if you're out there listening to us live, Mark Nichols puts on a great event. It's usually limited to about 100 players. They do it right down in Fort Pierce there. And it's great fishing, some big trout in the area, snook also. I think actually it's scheduled in April this year, and it's usually sold out. You have to be Johnny on the spot and watching the DOA website for when they post it. It's like it sells out in just a few days. And, I mean, it's definitely worth going and fishing it at least once, because the entry fee that you pay, it's $50-$60, and you get a whole tackle box of DOA lures, a tackle tray, and that's what you got to fish with for the tournament. It usually takes about 90 to 100 inches of fish between redfish, trout, to get in a snook to win that tournament. But awesome time. I actually won a kayak in a raffle that year, so it was a pretty good trip for me. So, but I know he's out in Texas right now or something, you said, and I think we should invite Mark onto the show and get him on a broadcast and talk about plastics and stuff like that. The guy can rig those plastics in 100 different ways for each one of them that he has, too. It's amazing. Oh, yeah, and Sean's saying registration is closed. Yeah, waiting list, yep. Yeah, it didn't take him long. It doesn't take long for him to sell out on that. So, anyways, yeah, that's cool, man. Yeah, let's see who we got here. But anyways, huh?
I get it.
Okay. And fishing is spring is coming on. Spring break is coming up, and I'm not going to say the F word. But we are planning a trip the first week in April, I think sometime around the 5th through the 11th, and we hope to get on some fish and spend some time in some warmer weather. So, but what else went on at the outdoor show, man? See anything new? See anything cool?
Saw lots of stuff, actually. It was there's, you know, rods all over the place. Nothing really new in terms of kayak angling. There were a couple cool baits that are out there. One is actually a plastic spoon type bait, you know, a plastisol poured spoon bait that I was a little skeptical about at first until I took it out to the pond, rigged on an extra wide gap hook, and I could skip it 15 to 20 to 30 feet with a couple of casts of practice. And it seemed to me like it would be the perfect lure for skipping up underneath the mangroves or way back under docks looking for the snook that are hanging back under there. So I think that's they've got two different sizes. They had the big size at the show, but they're coming out with a smaller size that I think will appeal to a lot of redfish fisher persons as well. So really looking forward to seeing a little bit more about that. New boats, lots of new boats. Wasn't really into that, but That's really about it. Lots of people coming and walk around and, you know, kicking tires and checking things out. Bull Bay did very well. A lot of interest. That's really about it between that and hanging out at DOA.
Cool.
Yep.
Sounds like fun.
It was a good time.
They don't have too many of those here in Atlanta. I don't know why, but it's more like football and stuff here. Let me say hey to caller, the award-winning, soon-to-be Cecil B. DeMille 2, the Bad Back cast, Rob DeVore. Hey, Rob.
I'd like to thank the Academy.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Whatever. I'm still just Rob.
Wow, you got the kids, man.
Wow. That hasn't happened in a long time.
So what's going on?
Nothing. Just calling up to see what you guys were up to and finish up my ice cream after eating dinner and right here at a Yaktastic Central here, man.
Right. So what's new at Yaktastic Central, man? I know you've been threatening to release some information, and I haven't seen anything on it yet. So what's going on with you, man?
Well, that got released yesterday. We were just wanted to let you know that, you know, I found out that we had won the award for Best Documentary at the Real Paddling Film Festival for Everyday Push, and I was just in tears, man. I mean, it was just you just have no idea how much work went into it, you know, and, you know, the story is just so good. You know, it's Mike and his story,
right.
And it's just amazing, you know. It was just, that's the big news, you know, that was
very
the
awesome
news,
man.
That I was going to let you in on, and, you know.
Cool.
I was just, you know, we're stoked, and, you know, hopefully people that are, you know, ordering their film festival to come to their town will pick that movie, you know, they'll select that movie to show, and that's all that we can hope for.
So you got some insight on how that works, man? Can you explain the process?
Yeah, let's say that you want to bring the Real Paddling Film Festival to Atlanta, right? So you pay them X amount of dollars. It's actually affordable. And then you select there's 25 films overall, and you select the ones that you want to show. And then let's say you had it for Georgia Kayak Fishing and you were having an event and you were doing the Real Paddling Film Festival, and then you just charge admission to get in, and you could probably recoup your dollars and then some, probably.
Now, do they bring, like, the big giant blow-up screen, or do I have to have a venue to put it on?
No, you have to have the venue and all the gear and everything. They pretty much just send you the films.
Ah.
But there's some good ones, man. The whitewater stuff is amazing. Some of the whitewater films are just like, I mean, you just, wow. You know, I just want to stop now because I'll never make anything that awesome, you know.
Oh, never say never, man. There's always going to be something cool out there. But, yeah, congrats, man. That's awesome, and it's a great film. I think it's close as it's getting to Atlanta. I think it's going to be over in Birmingham, and we're thinking about taking a ride over there and watching some of the film. So we'll see.
Yeah,
him.
They're good.
Yeah.
They're really good. There's a lot of competition in there and everything, but since we won our category, that means that we're in the running for the People's Choice Award, which they select at Outdoor Retailer.
Cool.
I believe.
Awesome.
So fingers crossed for that one, too.
So you got to go to Outdoor Retailer to vote, or can you vote online or something like that?
I'm not really sure. I know that I think that's when they select it, but I don't know if there's a ballot at the event or what. I'm not really sure. I'm going to my first event, Real Paddling Film Festival event, May 3rd, down in Fort Myers Beach.
Uh-huh.
Me and Mike are going down there. The Southwest, I always mess up their name, the South, you know, Benito Bob and all his clan down there.
Yeah.
You know, the Southwest Florida.
Southwest Florida Kayak Anglers Association.
Yeah, them. Them. It's like SWKKSZYBF. Those
it's
guys.
All silent. Don't
worry. Yeah. No. They're having a big, huge festival that weekend, like a kayak angling and paddling festival down there. It's like a 24-hour fishing tournament and vendors and raffles, and it's just a gaggle of stuff. It's like Disneyland for kayak anglers or something. So, and the Real Paddling Film Festival is that weekend, too, so me and Mike are going down and going to, you know, talk to some folks and
sign some autographs and all that good stuff.
No, none of that. None of that.
Yeah.
We're just dudes. We're just dudes, man. We're just bros.
Yeah, but you're award-winning filmmaker dudes, and that's a whole different dudeness. That's not just plain dudeness. That's elevated dudeness. So it's all good.
One with wheels and one with a beard.
Yeah. Well, he kind of tries to grow a beard, but then I think Stephanie makes him shave it off. So it's always been like various stages of growth. You should have seen him after he did the like 156-day or 156-mile paddle down. They started at the north end of the lagoon and paddled the whole Indian River system from, I think, I want to say like Mims all the way down to, you know, West Palm or something. I mean, it was some ridiculous amount of, you know, it took them like 21 days, and they were camping out on islands the whole time and all that stuff. So it was pretty cool. You should have seen him at the end. I was like, oh, yeah, there you go, Mike. Leave it just like that, dude. Keep it going. And he didn't.
Oh, man. So that was like the IRL paddle, right? He did that with like, that was like the same one that D was on and stuff?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, okay.
They did that. It was pretty cool.
Very cool.
But
cool.
It's just cool, you know, because when, you know, people that see the film that know me or, you know Mike or, you know, they're going to be like, yeah, man, that was really cool. But it's really cool when, you know, people that don't know us and stuff are really liking the film. So that says, you know, that makes me really happy when that sort of stuff happens. You know,
yeah.
It's just all I want to do is just make, you know, good stuff and people to enjoy it, you know.
It's good karma, man.
Yeah.
Good karma.
So what have you guys been up to, man? What's been going on? I've you know, missed your show last week, man. You know, with the AFWC and everything, and I saw the clone got the biggest trout of the tournament there, man. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and my newest buddy there, Florida Navy vet there, duded up the picture that we posted up there, so that was totally hilarious, and Brad got a big kick out of it. But yeah, he outfished me, man. You know, from the little bitty guy, he is totally come around, and actually, he's a fishing and shooting freak now, man. We're doing a tournament this weekend, so. But
cool.
No, we've been trying to keep from becoming popsicles, man. The second ice age is happening here in Atlanta and stuff. So,
got to break the ice with your kayak to get out on the river, right?
I know, man. I'm like gonna have to put like a steel keel on the thing, you know, so we can get our hopefully ice out is on its way, and we're actually thinking about going on the road. So keep your eyes and ears open. First week in April, man, we might might give you a shout, and definitely, you know, we should have you guys come back, you know, and you know, we'd do a broadcast and talk to you and about putting the push together and stuff like that. So, but that'd be awesome.
Sure.
But you guys got to get over all of your stardom and everything like that, man. Get your
just no stardom. I'm still, you know, I'm still me. I, you know, we're filming Bass on the Road 2 down in the Everglades. And I know everybody's going, ah, oh, geez. But that film made it into the festival, too.
Yeah.
It didn't win any awards, of course, you know, because unless it was, that was intermission and people were sleeping. But,
yeah.
I mean, it's okay. You know, we had fun with it. We learned a lot from it and everything. But this one is going to be a lot different. We're dragging all of those guys from the River Stalkers crew, you know, from Georgia and South Carolina down here to fish for peacock bass down in the Everglades. So
cool.
That's what's
nice.
Going on. And, you know, we got a bunch of going with that a little, or, you know, well, a little bit of star power anyway. So it's going to be we're a lot more organized this time. And, you know, I think that Bob and Jim kind of realized that, you know, to go out and make a film, you need more than just one guy with a camera and, like, you know, 6 days worth of fishing trips, you know. So,
right.
So we're doing that. And Rob Lee's coming down to help film and everything. It's going to be awesome. And I keep telling him I'm going to super glue that award to the hood of his truck when we're driving down to the Everglades.
Cool.
Nice. Well, as the security coordinator, I'm in charge of velvet rope coordination, so we can discuss that later as well.
Yeah. No, it's going to be really cool. You know, we're getting into some history down there and everything, and swamp ape history, and you know, just things like that. You know, just it's going to be more than just, you know, fishing and everything, and you know, Bridget Howard's in there, and it's going to be a good. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah. Stay away from the Square Grouper, man.
Yeah. You ever see that film?
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, the cinematography is not the best, but it was an interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
So Mr. Becker has put up the link to the 2014 World Tour schedule for the Real Paddling Film Festival. For those of you listening to the podcast, it's RealPaddlingFilmFestival.com, R-E-E-L, PaddlingFilmFestival.com, all one word. And look on there for the tour schedule. Click on that. Get to 2014. Our buddy Rob DeVore here. Cinematographer extraordinaire.
I'll have you know, Chip, this is all your fault, okay?
Is that right?
All of this film stuff. Yeah, because you were the guy that told me, oh, yeah, man, get a Mac. Get a Mac, man. And I'm like, so I got a Mac, and then I'm like on Skype with Chip one day going, how do you, like, get the footage into iMovie and stuff, you know? And he's, like, showing me how to do that, and then from then on, it's just all downhill from there.
I'm humbled, buddy, you know?
We know my win.
It's all your fault, man.
All right. Well, you can blame me, but, let's see. What do you got there, Matt? Let me click on Matt here. He just joined us in Yak Chum from the frozen wastelands of New Jersey.
Hey, good evening, Chip. And
hey.
Congratulations, Rob. I heard your news, man.
Thank you, man.
Very cool.
Appreciate it.
I'm definitely going
to
check it out. The film festival comes right through Jersey at the end of this month. So.
We'll have to get up there and shoot striped bass on the road.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
And yet, the other day I was like turned on the news when I walked in the house and saw this big explosion up in New Jersey. I immediately start texting and messaging Matt, you know, and asking him if that's the result of his new propane powered yak up there or something.
that thing took out 20 condo units.
It was
a
mess.
Oh my god!
I feel bad for those people. They're homeless
and
it's freezing out.
Yeah.
What was it? A liquid propane tank or something?
No, a contractor actually was digging and hit a gas main.
Wow.
Yeah. It shredded.
One woman
those
died.
Pythos.
They don't even know where she came from. They don't know if she came out of one of the housing units there or she was walking by.
They just found her on top of a car or something, right?
Yeah. And a bunch
terrible.
Of the people that were working there got serious burns. So about a half hour south of me. So thanks for contacting me, Chip, to make sure I was okay. I appreciate that.
I figured it might take you a while to get up. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. Awesome.
So my little link there I put up, that's my new news there.
your new news. Let's see what it says here. It's going to be noise. It's going to come out over my microphone here. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's just a photo.
Uh-oh. Oh, my goodness. The man is going electric.
That's right.
Wow.
That's a big rig with a torpedo in a box.
Torpedo in a box. I think you got to take it out of the box for it to work, man.
Yeah, well, as you can see, there's still snow.
Yeah. We were getting ready for the getting ready to meet up at the boondoggle there. My buddy Cap D from Maryland there, he called me and said, dude, I can't even find my boats. They're in the back somewhere under the snow. But that's cool, dude. So, in fact, that's a good lead-in because we got the tool trucks here, and we got Greg's garage, and we're gonna try a new thing. We're gonna take about 15 minutes here, and we're gonna do some technical discussion. And Rob, you're welcome to hang to comment and stuff because I know some of this kind of relates to what you do and. Mr. Becker has got his slide rule and calculator ready to go, and I was looking to see if I had maybe some appropriate lead in here. But
and while you're looking, I'll let you know that I am wearing my brand new pocket protector as well, so we're good
awesome.
To go.
Awesome.
Safety goggles.
Safety goggles.
Two pair actually, a belt and suspenders kind of guy.
But anyways, here we go. Let's see. Let's try this one. We'll just use this one this week. We'll have to come up with one.
Yes, the BCGs with the tape are also in play.
That's right. All right. So this week,
awesome.
Our premiere version of the Tech Corner. And I haven't really thought up any real fancy name to go with it yet, but I said we're going to talk about electronics. But you know what you need for electronics to work?
Electric.
Electric, yeah. That's kind of the root word in electronics, right? It's kind of the Canadian version. Electronics, right? So you need electricity. So we're gonna start off our technical discussion about batteries. I'm going to refer to folks if you're listening to the podcast and all. There was actually a really interesting article done. It was published in Yak Angler in May of last year by a buddy up there and also in the Great White North, Greg Crisp. And Greg is a real handy guy, and he's always doing something out in the garage or in his workshop. He's got a huge fabrication shop in there, but we're going to talk about batteries, and batteries are real important to creating electronics. And you're going to take, you know, we're not like a bass boat where we've got three huge giant batteries in the back underneath the rear deck back there that are putting out 36 volts and all of that stuff. But definitely, you're going to need some kind of a battery, and.
Uh-oh. Well, it looks like Chip just locked himself.
Yeah,
yeah, it's so awesome.
You are going to need a battery, definitely, to
power
phone up.
Yeah, Chip definitely needs to power his phone back up. Hold on one second. Let me just make sure we don't lose the episode here. Let me keep it moving while he calls back in. So with the different kinds of things that we do, obviously in kayaks, as Chip said, you don't have the many different kinds of batteries. In larger boats, you have several different batteries for several different purposes. You have a cranking battery that's designed to provide high current for a short amount of time to start your engines. And then you've generally got deep cycle batteries, which are designed to provide a lower amount of power for an extended period of time and pretty much hold their voltage continually fairly steady over the duration of time that they provide that for running electronics, radios, lights, and things like that. And the kayaks were pretty much limited by weight and by size to what we can run. So most of the kayakers I know are running small lead acid sealed battery units, similar to what folks use for alarm systems and small electric fences and things like that. And it looks like Chip is back in the house.
Yeah, keep going, man.
Check one, two.
I'm here.
Yeah, actually, those
little
lead sealed batteries, you can find them online at a decent price if you just look up batteries for like UPS battery backup for a computer.
Exactly.
I found batteries on eBay for like $20, and they're excellent. They last years.
Yep, and Chip is gone again, so he looks like he's having some phone issues. So we'll see how that works out. But again, most of the batteries that I'm seeing are those types. Batteries are categorized several different ways. They're categorized by their chemical composition. You heard us mention lead acid. Those are batteries that make power by a reaction between the metal that's in the batteries and the acid that's similar to your car battery, the smaller batteries. You heard Matt mention sealed. There are sealed batteries, which once they're manufactured, you don't add any more electrolyte or any more of the juice that's in there. Everything that's in there is in there, and when they're done, they're done. They can certainly be recharged, or they're batteries that can be maintained by adding more. And then there's the chemistry. Again, back to the chemistry, lead acid, some of the other batteries you might be more familiar with from your handheld electronics are alkaline batteries, nickel cadmium, lithium ion. These are all referred to the chemistry that's used. The most common ones that folks are going to be familiar with for powering electronics on the water are going to be sealed lead acid batteries. Chip, did you have anywhere you want to go with that? We'll check in with you to see if you're actually back.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
All right. Yeah, so good job. And that's right. So the types of batteries what we're seeing most folks use in the kayaks now are the small, about 3 to 4 pound battery. It's a glass matted battery. It's got lead inside of it, so be careful if you get one and you use it up and you decide to dispose of it properly, because it does contain lead inside. And the acid itself inside of that battery has been gelled, and it's sealed, so it can't get out unless the battery itself cracks or anything. But that's what we're seeing, and typically, I know that I looked through real quick to see what some of the basic systems are using. I know that Hobie, they have their bait bucket or their bait tank that they put in the back of the Pro Anglers and the Outback and stuff. And that works on a 6-volt battery, so don't go grabbing a Hobie battery and think it's going to power your fish finder, because the fish finder is going to need 12 volts, all right? And voltage, right? We've got two kinds of voltage: alternating current, which is like in your house, and direct current, which is the DC battery, and that's what we're going to be using to power the systems in our kayak. And looking at Greg Crisp's article here, I think that's about when I dropped out. Greg produced an article at yakangler.com on fishing with kayak electronics and batteries, and did a real nice job of explaining it. And he shows you how to figure out how many amps. You know, you got voltage, which is like You need direct current for the voltage. You need amps, which are kind of like the gallons per minute. It's the flow of electricity.
Right.
And typically a 12 volt DC battery, they come in. I've seen them in two sizes typically at like Austin Kayak and Yak Gear, our buddies up at the Kayak Fishing Store and Sunjammers. Sunjammers, they sell a lot of Hobies, so he's got Hobie accessories, and they're 6 volt. But you usually see a 6 volt, about a 6 to 12 amp battery. The 12 volts, I've seen them come in a 7 amp size and a 10 amp. So, and the amps is it's basically, if you got a 7-amp battery, it's amps per hour, so like gallons per hour is the flow of electricity. So it's about seven. You could do 7 amps, or you could do 1 amp in 7 hours, or 7 amps in 1 hour. But Greg did a nice job in his article in that he's using a Hummingbird 598 CI. It's a color unit with HD and the side imaging on it. And he said it was rated at 615 milliamps. So milla being that metric system stuff, you know, like Great White North and metric beers and all that stuff, right? Double it and add 30, eh? But 615 milliamps, that's 0.615 amps. And that's what it said in the book for the unit. And that's with the backlight off. But he's a handy guy, and he took his amp meter and plugged it in line between the battery and the unit with it turned on and with the backlight on full. And he said the current draw was only about 430 milliamps. So that's like, you know, about three quarters of what it was rated. And Greg brings up a good point, or Mr. Crisp, in his article, in that, you know, when you first use a brand new battery, after you've used it a few times, it's never going to be like brand new again. So you're not going to get the complete rating for a battery. But then it'll kind of level out, and it kind of stays at about probably 90% or so. But he basically shows you how to do the math and how to figure it out. But that Hummingbird 598 CI HDSI combo with the backlight on was 430 milliamps, but it's rated at 615, so he used that for his calculation, and he figured out that if he wanted to run his fish finder for 12 hours, you'll multiply that by the 615 milliamps, came out to 7380 milliamps per hour, and you divide that by 1,000, you get a 7.38 amp hour battery. So with one of those 12-volt, 7-amp hour batteries that you can buy, and they're usually, I've seen them anywhere from $15 to $25, not including a charger. And that'll get you probably easy a good day of fishing out on the water. And Greg, you down in Flamingo, you were using, what kind of setup did you have in your boat?
In Flamingo, I had a Lowrance Elite 5 DSI. But to cut back on the power, because I wasn't sure how good the battery I had was, and it was really the first time I'd had the unit out, I was actually able to disconnect the transducer and shut off the sonar. So while the expected draw was about 0.8 of an amp per hour, or 0.8 amp hours, which would mean that out of an 8 amp hour battery, I should have expected about a 10-hour life, I was able to cut that back significantly by not using the sonar, just using the GPS and screen portion, which I think saved on the battery life tremendously.
Yeah, and like I said, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I had it set up in a Yak Attack cell block, which actually held this size battery right underneath the unit itself, mounted on one of the side rails on the Slayer Propel 13.
Cool. So, and Sean Russell in the chat room there, he said he brings up his fish finder uses about 1 amp per hour. So that's huge. Sean, what kind of fish finder are you using, man? That must be one of those big giant screen things. Yeah, I think Greg Crisp is I don't know if he's an electrical engineer, but he's some kind of engineer. I'm going to put the link in the chat room up. That's Greg's article right there. And I know that Mr. Becker probably edited that one, but
I did.
But yeah. But it's a good article, and that's really kind of what I wanted to start off with our little tech talk here, first time tonight. And I've seen – I found a couple of websites. There's like batteryweb.com, and they have some different batteries. And typically these batteries that we're using, I think the two that I've got were actually designed for a standby power system, an amps or a UPS. So, okay, so he's a dual scan with overlay Hummingbird 988. Yeah, so you're probably around. Yeah, you're probably doing about 1 amp per hour. You get a 12 volt with a 10 amp hour, and you should be able to run it for pretty much a day. You know, at least 8 hours on the water. But yeah, you know, and it's probably when it. I don't know, and Greg didn't talk about this in his article, but I think at a certain point when those batteries get down to a certain percentage, when it gets to a certain level, it's not going to run the machine. So we'll have to kind of look at that. When it gets below a certain level of amps left or voltage left in the battery, it doesn't have enough flow. I saw, who was it, non-pro staff Murdoch there. He brought up an interesting point about using analogy of volts, how high the water is, and amps is how much the water falls, right? Is that how he said it there? Very good.
Yeah, how much it's flowing, yep.
Yep, absolutely. So, water in a pipe, yep.
I wonder if it makes a difference if, say, you're in 10 feet of water or 1,000 feet of water on power consumption.
Actually, I talked to the guys at Lowrance about that, and at least with the Lowrance units, no, because the unit doesn't sense, unless you are specifically limiting it to specific ranges that you're looking to, the unit itself doesn't adjust its output power by the depth. At least the units that I was talking about and the one I used sends out the same power signal every time it pings the bottom with sonar. So if you're fishing in 10 feet of water, it obviously doesn't take as much signal to send out to get a strong enough signal back to interpret. Or if you're fishing in 500 or 1,000 feet of water, obviously it takes a lot louder ping to get a good enough return back. But this unit doesn't differentiate. It sends out the same power ping every time. So
that's good.
The amount of power that it uses to interpret that is going to be level. And display that is going to be relatively level, you know, all other things being equal, no matter what. So there may be units out there that do that adjust for power consumption. But I would think once you're getting into units that are that sophisticated, you're up out of the, you're not running it off an alarm system battery. It's wired into your 36 volt system onto your $500,000 Bertram. So,
right,
power consumption is less of an issue.
Sean asks, has anybody tried a single lead battery with 22 volts? And I'm not familiar with the 22-volt battery, but there is a possibility, and I'm not sure. I know that, like in my RV, I put a battery bank in it where I took 6-volt batteries, and I wired them in series, so it doubled my voltage. I got 2 6-volts. It gives me 12 volts, and it doubles my amps. Okay, so I'm getting from a 6-volt, 250-amp-hour battery. When I put two of them, and I think I'm right. Double-check me there, Grand Interrogator, Inquisitor.
Hi. I'm about
yeah.
to.
Are you? Is it
yep.
series or parallel?
Well, if you wire batteries in series, which means you connect the positive of one to the negative of another, so you're like pushing two, a car pushing another car down the road. What you're doing is doubling the voltage, so you'll increase the voltage. It's the voltage added together. So in your case, you had 2 6-volt batteries, one pushing the other one down the road. You have 12 volts, but if they're both the same current rating, it only generates the same amount of current. So if those were 6-volt, 500 milliamp batteries, you'd have a new 12-volt, 500 milliamp. System. If you want to double the current, you connect them in what's called parallel. You connect the negative to negative, the positive to positive, and then connect that to the outside of the system. That's like the two cars going side by side. You've got the same amount of voltage. It's still 6 volts, but you've doubled the current. So you would have your you'd have 6 volts at 1 amp.
And that's why I did 4 batteries. I did 2
Perfect.
In series, and then put the two put two in series and then took the two pairs that were in series and put them in parallel. So that doubled the amps. And I'm thinking, and Sean there, he's saying he's got the one that's 22 amps there. That it was 22 amps.
Monster.
Yeah. That would be a monster battery right there. So if you're doing one amp, and see, like he said here, he's got 12 hours, and after it gets down to 10 volts, it cuts off. So that you might be able to, there's when it drops below a certain voltage, then your system is going to drop off. But I'm wondering if you could take like one of those little 12 volt 7 amps, right, and wire those things so that you could still get 12 volts, but you would double it up to 14 amps. And that might get you, and that would only double the little, what is that, about 8 pounds of batteries. How much is it? Weighs 13 pounds. That's not bad. One of these stinking Trojan golf cart batteries that I've got for my RV, those things weigh 65 pounds a piece. Yeah.
Right. So, I think the Slayer Propel would sit a little stern low.
I put it up in the bow.
Yeah, put it up in the bow. Well, then you'd be shipping water over the bow handle, but
yeah. Yeah, so and Matt, what is the what's the battery on the Torquedo?
The Torquedo battery is actually a lithium ion. So like Mr. Becker was saying earlier, it's a different chemical. I forget how he was saying it, but it's actually 26.9 volts. So whatever that equals.
That must be some European thing.
Yeah,
it's just the way the cells are
made in Germany.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And now I tell you, on my first fish finder that I had was a little hummingbird, little bitty unit, and what I did to put battery to that was I went to Radio Shack, and I got one of those little plastic deals that holds 8 batteries, and I just use this just 8 cells. And you get like, what is it? I think Greg actually says it.
It's
yeah, you get, yeah, it gets, so you can actually run it with just a couple of, with the double A's. So now there's also the charging and stuff. You get you special, like you said, with the lith ions, you need a special charger. Some of these fancy ones, like the guys are using in their radio-controlled airplanes and stuff like that, you can't just put those on a regular charger. That's going to mess them up. But just the little AGM batteries that we're using in the kayaks, they won't spill. You don't need to use the big trolling motor batteries, and you can run them you can charge them a couple thousand times, and they'll work out okay. But so that, what do you think? That's a good point for our first tech talk. And maybe
sounds good. I didn't realize we had so many electrical engineers.
Yep. The only thing I would add, Chip, is to just make sure that whatever you do, you pay as much attention to your charging system as you do to your battery. Because not only can, if you use the wrong charger, either the wrong voltage, or you attempt to overcharge, or you use the wrong type of charger for your battery chemistry, you can not only ruin the battery, but you can blow the battery up, you can overheat the battery, cause a fire, burn your house down, kill your family. Not to overstate that, but just pay attention and make sure that you're using the proper type of charging system for your investment in your battery. And be prepared that the right type of charging system for that battery may cost you as much as the battery itself or maybe more. But just make sure you invest in the right tools for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, don't forget your battery is also a great survival tool where you can actually cross a wire to cause a short circuit and get some fire going.
Or make toast.
Make toast.
Yeah.
I like toast.
Absolutely. And Sean, their Florida Navy vet, he says, never leave them discharged, your batteries. Always charge them back up before you store them. They'll last longer that way. So, all right.
Yeah, and I've heard you're not supposed to leave them on a concrete floor also.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard that. Is there any... Mr. Becker, is that an urban legend or what?
No, it's not.
I was always taught to
idea.
Set them on a piece of wood. You know,
yep.
Put them on,
yeah.
on a 2x4 or something.
Yep. isolates the temperature. Yep, absolutely. And if you've never seen one blow up in the winter when the battery freezes, I could send you pictures of my old detached garage that had battery acid stains on everything from one end of a 10x24 garage to the other end, from where I guess I wasn't paying attention when I plugged the charger back in and left it on a partially frozen deep cycle battery and just blew it to pieces. I did.
Daggum. I've actually seen
I was outside.
The lithiums, I'd be careful with those. I've seen those are what are typically in your laptop batteries, and I've seen those do a cell runaway. And I mean, there's some great YouTube videos on from people in. I saw the training film from the FAA. They were trying to limit people. That's one of the reasons why they didn't want people taking battery powered equipment onto airplanes, because you get a cell runaway and those things will go. They just burn up and they start popping and cracking and stuff. And actually, I think there was a mishap in an aircraft where I don't know if it brought the plane down. I can't recall the complete story now, but I do know that it was a guy traveling to a job site, and he had a rechargeable screw gun or something in his carry-on, and it got hot, and sucker started a fire.
That must have smelled real good on that little confined plane.
Well, wasn't that the thought behind? They thought that was what brought down. I'm trying to remember what the flight was that went down in the Everglades. That there was a conversation about whether or not that.
No, those were actually oxygen generators.
Okay. But there was a whole conversation though about the oxygen generators being similar to. And that's what they based it on when they stopped allowing them to transport or to ship lithium-ion batteries by air for a while because of that, because they said it could have the same type of effect.
And Sean put up the 787 Dreamliner, same thing there with those batteries. Serious issue. So battery discussion, I think we're good. And we'll come up with some better music, but... That's been Tech Talk on Kayak Fishing Radio I guess if you want to hear something special on Tech Talk, drop us a line on the Facebook page there and say, hey, talk about this next week, and we'll, Mr. Becker, and I was thinking if I got a hold of Matt, you know, early on in the game, we would just have him take on the persona of tool trucks, and you know, we could pose questions to him.
Very nice.
Yeah, Sean wants better music. All right, Matt, work on some better music for us, man.
Called to get some techno robotic music for Tech Talker.
Yeah, that's it, man. Some hydraulics working. You know, maybe.
What we need to do is we need to commission Mr. DeVore with GarageBand. To put them together for that. There you
That's
go.
It. Oh, Jim wants to know about GoPros. Dude, that stuff is so hard, man, because they're little tiny cameras, and I don't know. All right, well, we might be able to talk about cameras one weekend. So.
Get the Bad Badcast to give a talk about it.
You know my problem with those cameras? I can put them all over my kayak and everything, but I forget to turn the daggum things on.
Yeah, that's why you got to get the little wrist remote controller that turns them all on with one flick of a button.
Yeah.
No, I tried that, dude. And I couldn't get them all to work. You know, you gotta sync them all up. So if you got more than one camera so that they'll all turn on at the same time, nah, one would turn on, one wouldn't. No. That's too in-depth for me. So anyway,
that's why we need to do a tech talk on it.
All right. So maybe next time. We'll go on to cameras, but I think we'll maybe work on maybe another week on electronics. We've got the power now, so we'll see what we can attach things to, because You know, one of the things I'm seeing on kayaks now, and it's kind of a trend, are lights. You know, going to pimp your kayak, man, with some glow lights and interior lights and all that good stuff, right?
Yeah, courtesy lights and
well, yeah, you laugh, but maybe coming to a Slayer Propel near you in the near future.
There you go, right? All right. Anyways,
are you going to coordinate? Are you going to coordinate the color of the neon light to the color of the kayak and put them right below the water, kind of like the lights that are on the big, you know, the big yachts that shine down in below the water?
We had those light strips at the Boondoggle. We had those light strips at the Boondoggle, man. And you could change the color of them and everything. It's very cool.
Yeah, see, all
right.
Now there you go.
That's right.
I'll work on the sound system. Well, some bass coming
nice.
Out of the kayak.
There you go, man. We'll do a little thumping. A little tub thumping.
Subs.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're around to the top of the hour. We'll go along, and Matt, it's still cold up there. Still look like there was snow. It doesn't look like your boat's going to get out on the water anytime soon.
Well, it's supposed to be 50 degrees on Saturday, so I'm thinking about uncovering the boats, and I'm going to try to get that motor installed. That's my number one prerogative.
Awesome. So we'll see a little article put up on that and some pictures of the install and all that good stuff.
Absolutely.
All right. Yep. And then at some point we'll do a tech talk on motors for your kayak, right?
Yeah. Sounds good.
Very cool. Jim, on the north side, hit the pond this weekend, maybe?
Maybe. I've done all my chainsaw work, so if it warms up a little bit and I can get a little free time, I might do that.
Right. And Mr. Becker?
Yep, I'm looking to possibly get out and throw one of the new Bobet rod setups with the microwave guides that I'm doing some evals on, seeing how the microwave guides throw on those rod setups. And I'm probably going to be playing with the differences between paddling standing up and pulling the Slayer Propel 13. I've got a big old closet rod rigged up similar to what our buddy Bill Howard used to use, and I am a shameless imitator when it comes to things that work, and he certainly proved how well that works. So I may give that a shot, and while we look to advance the state of the art, but just see how the Propel pulls in the shallows.
Awesome, and I got some new toys coming that we'll be trying out too. So maybe save that article for a couple more weeks. So
absolutely.
But all right, folks, that was it, and we're appreciate you guys, Matt, Jim, Mr. Becker, Bad Bad Cast there for joining us tonight. The folks in the chat room, Sean and Mr. Murdoch and Sean Russell and the Navy vet there. We actually will be seeing you guys down in Florida, not too far out. I don't want to make too much about it because I don't want Jobu to get interested and start looking my way when I head that way, because I know the weather that you had today was not my fault. All right. So we'll see you next week, Monday night. Chuck kicks it off with the Monday night kickoff Redfish Chuck Show. Tuesday nights, we're over in Texas with Jaron Wozel, and on Wednesdays, the Low Sodium Show with our landing crew, Mark Wheeler. Join us this time next week, and we'll see you next time. Take a kid fishing. I'm going to be taking mine shooting this weekend, so get them outdoors, and we'll see you next week. And that's it for tonight. Thanks, guys.